And now it is time for City Talk.
Good morning.
Commander Adam Bema of the Journalistic Navy.
Comandante Che Bema is here. No, I'm here to talk public transit this week. I wanted to start off by mentioning that today the STM is unveiling the new Azure Metro cars at Barry UCAM Station. So, you know, to kick off this this transit talk today, which will feature an interview with Taras Gresko, the author of the book Strap Hanger, which is a great book about public transit in North America and around the world. He's a guy who went to all these different cities, basically wrote a book about cities and talked about how the transit infrastructure plays a role in lives and how it can help create jobs and, you know, just be this this great economic engine for a city. Now, these metro cars that we're unveiling, I suppose we're not going to actually get them in Montreal for another year or two.
2014 or something like that.
2014, yeah. I think I saw that on Facebook. But these new metro cars, I've seen the photo of the interior. They look beautiful, like spacious, roomy, kind of like the new metro cars in Toronto.
Open concept.
Yeah, you can walk from one end all the way to the other, so you don't have to worry about cramming in one door. You can just go to another door and walk wherever you want on the train.
There is one thing it's missing, though, and I did some reading on this yesterday because I thought it might come up in the conversation. It has an open concept. You can move car to car. It's got lots. It's got more points to stand and hold on to, right?
For strap hangers,
right? No straps though.
No straps.
Strap free
bars.
Lots of bars. Strap free. So it has all those things. It has new ergonomic seats, or so it says, and it's supposed to be quieter and have a better ride than other subway cars. But what is the one complaint about the metro?
It's always so crammed. It's
well,
very
but it's
small
very.
Cars.
Hot.
No air conditioning.
No air conditioning. So
the problem with Montreal.
Andy Riga in the Gazette yesterday, and I posted a link to this interview on our blog at ckutmorningafter.wordpress.com. Andy Riga in the Gazette yesterday was talking to, or he played a clip. He had a video, a YouTube video from the STM talking about why the cars would not have air conditioning. Because this is a big complaint.
Right.
If you'll remember, about a year ago, Projet Montréal released a video called Il fait chaud dans le métro, which was a takeoff on Il fait beau dans le métro, which was the jingle they wrote in the 60s when they opened the metro. So here's the explanation. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
And you can tell me if you believe it. Montreal's metro system is entirely underground. Which means that all ventilation has to be done mechanically, has to be done artificially. It's not like Toronto or New York or Chicago, where some is underground, but some is also above ground. So in those cities, the tunnels open out to open air, right?
So that fresh air is getting
in. That helps a lot with ventilation. They still have to do some mechanical, artificial ventilation, fans, that sort of thing. But they open to the outside at some point. Not so, apparently, of Montreal's metro. What air conditioners do is they take warm air and they get rid of the heat and they insert cold, right? So if you have an air conditioner, you know that on the outside of the air conditioner, it shoots a lot of hot air out of the thing. So the guys at the STM say that if they were to put air conditioning on the metro, it would actually raise the temperature in the metro stations.
Oh, in the stations, yes.
Yes. So it would make it more uncomfortable. Hmm. Now, they have been spending a kajillion dollars. Not a billion, though. He said it would cost billions to air condition the whole system, like cars, or the metros, the buses, the stations, because you have to air condition the stations, too. He said it cost billions of dollars, but they're doing a new ventilation plan to move more cool air that they say will lower the temperature in the stations by 3 degrees, which, well, I don't know. Hey, listen.
That might help a little.
Better than a kick in the arse. But that is why, even on these new super high-tech subway cars, it will still fait chaud dans le métro.
Why is it so? It's exactly so. No, yeah, that's it. I mean, if it gets any hotter in the metro stations, you know, mid-July, August, I mean, people will start to keel over. Like, that is just extremely hot down in the metro
stations. Well, even in the winter, you know? I mean, this is the city where people get into the metro and take off and have to take off
all their
winter gear.
Exactly. And in Toronto, you know, because, you know, if you're coming down the Yonge University Spadina line down into downtown, you know, it's outside, you know, Summerhill Station, all these different stations. Before you get to Bloor, and then you go in underground, and most of the downtown core is underground, the TTC subway. So it is actually quite pleasant in the TTC.
It is one of the downsides of a rubber-tired metro, too.
Exactly.
If you want to get really transit nerdy about it, is that when you run the metro on rubber tires, the rubber tires make contact with the surface. That creates heat. That warms the stations.
And it makes the fact that they can't build bigger metro cars, right?
That's right.
Yes, because the metro cars in Toronto are spacious, large, well, as they're in wider. Many other cities, wider.
They're wider.
Whereas in Montreal, they can't be very wide because of the rubber wheel system. But anyways, moving on from Montreal's metro.
The Azure.
But continuing with public transit, last week, Velo-Québec head Gabe Klein, a U.S. transit specialist, transit guru is what a lot of people call him. He was here for Bike Week, and he was speaking at La Grande Bibliothèque after our program last Friday. So I went down there, and I listened to his speech, his presentation. I mean, he was talking a lot about what his work that he did in Washington, D.C. under Mayor Adrian Fenty when he was leading the Department of Transportation in Washington, D.C. Now, what he did was kind of revolutionized, you know, transit thinking in that city and you know, trying to put everything together. And, you know, so, you kind of envision that in Montreal where you get off the metro and get on a Bixi with your same Opus card, you know, trying to make everything very seamless and put signs everywhere that tell you when the next LRT is coming, you know, where the closest Bixi station is because they ended up getting Bixi.
That makes a lot of sense, actually, because the Bixi keys are actually a contactless fare system. Even though you have to slide them into that little slot, that's just the interface. It could just as easily be a touch because the key works the same way that the Opus cards do.
Exactly. And Gabe actually came here 2-3 years ago to study Bixi and to bring it to Washington, D.C. So it's interesting that Velo-Québec would bring him back to talk about the wonderful things he's achieving in Washington, D.C. and now Chicago, because he went to Chicago after Mayor Rahm Emanuel was elected, brought Gabe Klein there to make Chicago one of the most bike-friendly cities, because Chicago is a nice flat city. You know, they're increasing bike lanes nonstop. It's the windy city, obviously, yes. So it's very difficult to pedal against the wind. But, you know, he's trying to change the concept towards cycling there. Now, I'm interested in Gabe Klein's concept because he comes from a tech consultant background, tech consultancy, and then he kind of went into car sharing, started working for Zipcar. So he comes from the private sector, and he talks a lot about this in his speech.
Technology is very, very important, whether it's getting people information on their phone so they know where the bike sharing station is, or when the next bus is coming, or when they're on the bus to look at all the transportation options as they're heading into a particular area, and all the GIS systems and coding that can be done now is very important to get people information to their mobile phones. There's obviously also information you can put right on the roadway for people, whether they're on bikes or in cars. And in terms of transit, we again have to rebuild all of these systems. We have in Chicago about a $10 billion need right now in transit. About $5 billion for rebuilding and $5 billion for expansion, which is a big issue. But as we rebuild these stations, for instance, we're adding facilities so you can take your bike down the stairwell. We're putting bike racks outside of stations or even inside of stations, and adding the technology features that make it more pleasurable to ride.
That was Gabe Klein. He's the transit guru from the United States that was here last week to speak about Bike Week and how important bikes are, and how he said how biased he is towards two wheels as opposed to four. Now, he grew up in the bike industry, so
to speak. Two wheels good, four wheels bad.
Exactly. Well, he says he still loves his four wheels, you know, he's driving around, but he prefers, you know, two wheels so people can get around the city. And, you know, so it's just easier for pedestrians. And he was talking about things that San Francisco is doing by, you know, when you get to those points of the intersection, you know, if you do have an isolated bike lane from traffic and trying to make it, you know, pretty with like, beautiful flowers, so cars aren't going to hit you because those are the contact points at intersections. So he's talking about that and how Chicago's really becoming, you know, or how Rahm Emanuel wants it to become one of North America's most bike-friendly cities. I mean, obviously, Montreal is highly regarded, and a lot of people come here to study our bike infrastructure and how we rolled out our bike sharing program with bike lanes, and that's the problem. A lot of cities just throw in the bike share system, maybe the Toronto, maybe, and they're not creating bike lanes for cyclists.
If we just picked one off the top of our head,
I always have to bring Toronto up. Not too bike friendly these days, but yeah, just he speaks a lot about Chicago, and I mean, it's just quite inspirational what he's trying to achieve in that city under Rahm Emanuel. It's basically Rahm Emanuel's campaign promise
was bike sharing
and more bike lanes.
This is a little bit of the history of Chicago. And I think to really know what you want to do in your city, you have to understand the past. And a lot of the things that that we want to do, believe it or not, have already been done. These are not new ideas. In fact, Randy and I were talking last night. There's an exhibit in Chicago of all the old bikes in Chicago. And Randy was telling me there were over 200 companies either manufacturing bikes or bike parts in Chicago. So in the US, almost all the bike output was coming out of Chicago. So I went to look at some of these bikes at the exhibits. They had full suspension bikes, shocks in the back, shocks in the front, in the 1800s.
So Gabe Klein again talking about how this has all been done in Chicago before. I mean, the streetcar system, the right. bike lanes. Chicago was a cutting edge bike manufacturing city even. So he wants to bring this all back to the Windy City. And, you know, obviously a lot of people are for that, but you do get the suburban drivers.
It's amazing how North American cities are doing a full 180 exactly on the way they get around. You know, go back 100 years and everyone was riding streetcars or LRT, we might call it now.
LRT.
Everyone was riding that. A lot of people were riding bikes. We went through a car revolution, and now we're actually going through a sort of a transit re-revolution.
Right. That's a very good point.
A rev-rev.
Revved up.
I've copyrighted that term. Thank you very much. Rev-rev. Yes.
But no, I just, like I said earlier, I find it very interesting that he would come back to Montreal to talk about his initiatives in the United States, in Chicago, and really pay homage to Montreal and just say that, you know, this is the city that gave him the ideas when he came here and saw our bike sharing system, which made me proud. And now, you know, we were talking last week about London and how they just kind of went crazy. They got into Bixi and they rolled out much larger than even Montreal has over the last 3-4 years that it's been in operation. Like now London has like... I don't know.
Well, they had significant they've had significant private sector financial backing.
Of course.
In the form of Barclays Bank.
And it even says Barclays on the bike.
Yeah. It says Desjardins here, but when you're looking...
Well, that's on the spoke, though. I believe it just says Bixi, and Rio Tinto Alcan's the one who constructed I believe, the portable systems for the bikes, and they kind of helped manufacture, get everything going, but I don't see any Rio Tinto Alcan, other than on the spoke that they added like 2 years ago, the spokes that say Desjardins, Rio Tinto Alcan, and a few other companies.
Telus. Whoever else is sponsoring them this year. Actually, that's been a funny thing this year, you know, that Desjardins is, or I can't remember, one of the companies it's sponsoring had a red square logo on the front of the bikes, like by total coincidence, and a lot of those have just been covered over with red squares. That's right. Montreal's big Z. But London... I don't know if we mentioned this last week. We may have, but it's London's Bixi system, backed by Barclays, that's been looking to buy the whole Bixi company away from Stationnement Montreal to help them out of their finance. Now we're not so far not interested in selling, but it is London, and under by the way a conservative mayor, Boris Johnson, who has done the biggest rollout of Bixi so far.
Exactly.
We're number two. But then again, there are, I think, 10 times as many people in London. So,
and Ken Livingstone, the mayor previous, was the one who instituted congestion charges, which is an issue that Taras Gresko brings up in his book, Strap Hanger. I mean, cities like Toronto and Montreal could really benefit from congestion charges because so many people are driving into the island. You know, if on our bridges, if we had little toll booths, we could use that money to bankroll public transit. And Montreal, I think, would be a great example because everybody has to get into this city by bridges because we're on an island. And in Toronto, the same thing. You know, the DVP, the Don Valley Parkway to get downtown, the 401, you know, you're crossing in. You either go through Toronto or if you want to come into the city, you'd pay these charges. And in his book, Strap Hanger, he talks to David Hanna, who's a professor at UQAM. And I've actually spoken with David Hanna previously, like in the past, and he's a wonderful man. He's got all these great ideas for Montreal and its transit future, and it would be interesting to see these things happen. He also speaks with Steve Monroe, who is one of the original Rocket Riders in Toronto, and he has a great website, stevemonroe.ca, and he's kind of the transit guru of Toronto.
He is absolutely the transit guru of Toronto.
Exactly, and he's been studying transit there for ages. He's a big proponent of the streetcar system, which is probably North America's, the world's oldest and longest serving.
Well, it was the only one that survived the big streetcar purge
in the 50s and 60s,
and it has continued to grow. Yeah.
Whereas in most cities, it just stopped.
And it's growing again.
And it's still growing. You know, they're still adding streetcar lines, you know, and now they're, you know, as they're doing on St. Clair, trying to isolate them so traffic cannot, like the Queen streetcar, which is... you know, that's what everyone thinks when they think streetcar. It's just tied up in traffic all the time. You know, when one comes and you got three other right behind it because traffic just holds up that first one.
Well, the two busiest surface routes in... Well, one of the reasons for arguing to keep the streetcar is that the two most heavily used surface routes in Toronto are both streetcar routes, the King and the Queen. Now, you're right that the Queen is like the Queen car in Toronto is the poster child for the anti-streetcar movement because it does get tied up in traffic. There's a lot of bunching. Bunching is when you get no streetcar, you get no streetcar for 20 minutes, and then you get three in a row, right? Because traffic allows them to bunch up. And the TTC has been doing a lot of work over the last few years, splitting up the route, doing more turnbacks, that sort of thing, to try to spread out the cars and increase the frequency on those routes. Because Toronto just invested $200 million in new streetcars, so the lines aren't going anywhere.
Right. And Toronto is actually a great example for car sharing because Gabe Klein talked a lot about car sharing in the United States and how, you know, it's a European concept. Mm-hmm. And when they brought it to the U.S., it kind of just exploded. It just went wild, especially with Zipcar, which is a private company, privately owned. And in Toronto, they had AutoShare for the longest time. And then Zipcar came into the city, so they've got two now. Whereas Montreal was kind of one of the originators again. You know, we were the first ones in North America, I believe, to have a car sharing system, Communauto.
Oh, really?
Yes, Communauto has been around a long time. Last week, as I mentioned, it was actually, you know, one of the initiatives of Claire Morissette, who was that militant Quebecois cyclist who, you know, fought for bike lanes in the city, for more bike lanes, staged cyclodramas on de Maisonneuve and Saint Laurent, fighting for bike lanes and isolated bike lanes with buffer systems to raise awareness of the fact that cyclists are at risk, you know, cycling in with the heavy traffic in downtown Montreal. So she actually got that going and a few other people. So they started Communauto in Montreal. It has also gone, you know, they've got it in Quebec City as well. And then kind of grew from there. But in the U.S. and, you know, that kind of, they went with Zipcar, which is more of a privately run company.
Yeah.
Whereas Communauto is private as well. But, you know, it was kind of like a community initiative that sprang up and just, you know, spread like...
And turned
like
into a business.
Turned into a great business.
I think it's interesting. If one thinks about transit more broadly and includes things like car sharing and even taxi cabs, taxi cabs are a form of
collector taxis.
Yeah, they're not exactly just
they do that in Latin America.
Well, and even just hailing a taxi on the street is a form of publicly accessible transit, even though it's certainly a more expensive form of publicly accessible transit. Mm-hmm. And to think of a city where privately owned cars were no longer very important because auto sharing was very prevalent, bike sharing was prevalent. There was a strong and well-regulated. We talked about that, I don't know, like last year on the show, I talked about the differences between London, Montreal, and New York's taxi system.
Okay.
And to think that there is a place for cars... There's always a place for vehicles in a city.
Of course.
But maybe privately owned vehicles aren't as important as they used to be.
Especially those big SUVs that take up a lot of space and don't really add or help the economy at all.
So you have a special interview for this week.
I do. I sat down with Teres Gresko at Cafe Gamba up in the Mile End. He actually lives in Outremont with his wife and child. And, you know, he's a big proponent of the park bus, the park buses, the big accordion buses that they have now. But, you know, there's always room for improvement. There may be some sort of LRT going in. We're hoping for LRT. But I sat down, I spoke with him, and we just talked transit. I'm here with Teres Gresko. He's a Montreal writer. You're the author of the book Strap Hanger. You're a public transit enthusiast. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, no, a real pleasure to be here.
All right, now, in researching the book, you went to many cities around the world. I mean, but more specifically, Montreal and Toronto, and you talk a lot about Vancouver as well, the whole Vancouver model of public transit. Do you see that as a model that other cities in Canada can replicate or do better?
Yeah, well, the book's a book about cities, and I really look at the way that transit has shaped cities, and freeways have shaped cities too. So I go to cities that are sort of nightmarish for transportation, like Phoenix, which is completely built around freeways, or Moscow, which is choking on cars right now, but does have a good metro system underneath its streets. Vancouver is interesting because it's a city I grew up in. I was born in Toronto. I've lived in Montreal for 15 years, but I spent half of my life in Vancouver. And I saw the SkyTrain come in the mid-80s. It was built for Expo 86. And when it first appeared, it was like this rinky-dinky people mover kind of thing. It looked like a toy. I wasn't too impressed by it. But slowly they've added lines. The Canada line was brought on, it started working for the 2010 Olympics. And it's actually turned into a pretty good system. It's an automatic system. There are frequencies or headways of 90 seconds at rush hour. And a lot of people ride it. I went to Portland, which is sort of famous for its MAX system. And they've built a lot of transit-oriented development in the suburbs. There's a place called Orenco Station. I wasn't too impressed by what I saw out there. It was kind of like going to, like, seeing Montreal row houses in a pine forest in the Pacific Northwest. And then there's a transit stop, a light rail. But the thing is that only about 15% of the people used it to get to work. Most of them still relied on their cars. Whereas Vancouver, they've done an intelligent thing. They've built the SkyTrain stations right next to the condo towers. You can't park around them, so you get to the SkyTrain stations by bus. So the buses go right up, so there's this great meshing. So it makes sort of these pedestrian areas quite walkable. And they have the results. Like, people who live in some of these condo developments, 55% of them get to work by transit, which is the results you're looking for. So I think, yeah, I mean, if you design these things intelligently, sometimes the system itself doesn't matter that much. It's more about the urban design around the stations. If they enable walkability, if they allow people to approach the stations really quickly, and if there's not a lot of parking around them, you won half the battle right there.
Right, and you mentioned that a lot throughout the book. You talk about transit-oriented development in cities. I mean, Los Angeles being one, the first one that comes to mind, and how they're trying to focus more on that, because obviously that city is a city of freeways and concrete. How are they faring?
I was surprised by Los Angeles, because that's everyone, when they think of Los Angeles, it's the city of the car. It's Southern California. Northern California's got San Francisco, which is more traditional urbanism. You know, it's got the cable cars still. It's got the grid. But Los Angeles was built around a rail network. It was built by the railways in the 19th century, and then it was built by its interurban and streetcar system, as seen in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? and there's a lot of truth to that. And the neat thing is that those town centers that were served by the interurban still exist, and there's some potential to create walkable urbanism around there. And Metro, to its credit, which is the local transit system, is working really hard. They're building a subway to the sea. They're building this new subway, an extension of the existing subway. They're building a lot of light rail, and they've, through a popular referendum, there's about $30 billion in new tax money. The people of Los Angeles voted for a half-cent sales tax that's going to fund transit for the next 30 years. So there's, you know, although it is sort of a basket case in some ways, they have really bad congestion. In other ways, they've done the math and they're investing in transit. And the transit-oriented development is really interesting because Metro owns a lot of parking lots around its transit stations. So it's removing the parking and building these condo developments, some like at Hollywood and Vine, right, which is an amazing location. And they're doing these pretty decent sort of urban condo developments that are really sought after. So I think there's a lot of future in Los Angeles. People write it off. The mayor there is really into transit. He's a bike rider now. He got knocked off his bike and had his wrist broken or elbow broken by a taxi a little while ago, so he's become quite militant about being a bike rider. So people are surprised by that. But it's a city of Latin Americans, a lot of Asians, a lot of people who are transit dependent. And as the local bus riders union says, buses are the feet of the poor, you know? So when over half of the population is Latin American, it makes sense that, you know, you've got to develop transit that's going to serve that population. So people laugh about Los Angeles. I'm optimistic about it.
That's great. And, you know, you talk about the fact that Los Angeles had this streetcar network in the city, and, you know, many cities across North America did have this kind of network, and then it was, you know, the tracks were torn up. Like here in Montreal, you walk down St. Catherine Street, you may find a track sticking out, and you're just like, wow, what the possibility. Now, are cities returning to light rail, LRT, streetcar networks?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it? It's like the bones poking through the civic skin. I'm always like, I ride my bike and I see them. And that great system did disappear. The interesting thing is that there's dozens of cities, literally dozens of cities in North America that are investing in light rail again, from Honolulu to weird places like Phoenix to southern cities. And that's a huge revival. In a lot of cases, it's very touristy. They aren't really heavy haulers. But when it's done right, I think it can be a good system. I'd love to see it coming back to Montreal again. I'd love to see a tram going up Park. I think the provincial government has said they're not going to devote any money to tramways for the next 5 years, which is a bit of a tragedy. But the great city in North America for streetcars is Toronto, which has the largest extant streetcar network in the world. This is not they haven't revived light rail. It never went away, which is fantastic. Melbourne has it. Of course, New Orleans has it, but it's much smaller. But Toronto stands alone, I think.
Right. And continuing with Toronto, I mean, in your book, you dedicate a whole chapter. You talk about the rise of the Ford Nation. I mean, Mayor Rob Ford and, the suburbanites kind of winning over the traffic war. So now he wants to stop the St. Clair. Well, the St. Clair streetcar is already built. And, you know, he's talking about it when it's already done. And it seems pretty successful. I mean, how do you feel?
I think the St. Clair, they call it the St. Clair disaster, but that's only from the perspective of suburban drivers who see a bit of congestion there. It's actually a great streetcar to ride. It's revived the street in a lot of ways. It's it's kind of a neglected street at the time. Now there's a lot more terraces. There's a lot more movement on the street. There's a lot more coming and going. And I think the merchants are really fond of the streetcar as well. Thing is, the rise of the Ford Nation is now the fall of the Ford Nation, because he's in a lot of trouble. He's sort of like an absentee landlord who only shows up to rescue a cat or fill a pothole. And what's going on now is that there's been a revolt in council against him. The TTC is now going to build essentially Transit City, which David Miller, the previous mayor, had set out. So these four light rail lines are going to be built instead of the subway that Rob Ford was advocating. He was only advocating that subway because it would have got streetcars off the street and would have made the city a lot easier for people in SUVs like himself, like suburban drivers from Etobicoke, to navigate. So it's nice that I think that the city has figured out that people have rejected his vision. And I use that term advisedly. It's not a vision, it's a lack of vision. I think in the end, Rob Ford's tenure in Toronto is just going to be a little speed bump in the history of a city that knows better and that deserves better.
Now, you talk a lot about Toronto being kind of a bit of a model. I mean, a little while back for its transit vision, and then a return to Transit City, this Transit City plan that was touted by Mayor Miller and a lot of people in his, his administration, I believe. Do you see Transit City as a return, as taking Toronto back to, its former glory of having really good transit service? Or do you feel that it just was never really lost?
I think it's been on hold for a long time now, unfortunately. And the revival of this new version of Transit City, though it doesn't go under that name, is going to be a great thing for Toronto. People associate streetcars in Toronto with a Queen car, which runs very slowly, is always tangled up in traffic. But the reality is they've built things like the Queen's Key car, the Spadina car, which run on dedicated rights of way. And these are really efficient. It's actually a great way of getting around the city. And things like the Eglinton LRT are also going to run like that. They're going to be efficient. They're going to be fast. And that's what the city needs right now. So, yeah, I think people will start looking to Toronto as a model of surface rail transit, which, let's face it, is a great way to go. I mean, buses are okay, but they're kind of clunky. They get stalled in traffic all the time. They get snagged when there's anything from, a jam to protest. We've all been stuck in these situations. They're prey to whatever's going on the surface. When you have a dedicated right-of-way for a streetcar or an LRT, it's a smooth ride. And it is a smooth ride, It's like you're not lurching back and forth all the time. That's one thing I love about the streetcars in Toronto. When they move fast, and some of them do. They're a great ride.
Right, if you're sitting there reading your book when you're on a bus, you know, you're bumping up and down. It's kind of annoying, but when you're on, you know, when you're on rail, it's always a nice smooth smooth movement, so you can sit there, read, fall asleep if you need to.
And you're this big vehicle on the road, right? You're significantly heavier than anything else on the road. So you feel like you've got the respect that you deserve as a conveyance carrying a couple of hundred people, right? Which really, I mean, when you compare the amount of space that a streetcar or a bus takes up compared to cars, this is, democratically, they should have more space on the road. And I mean, we've been sort of convinced by the rise of motor interests in the last century that the private automobile is the birthright of every urbanite. But it's really turning out to be not a good solution for, you know, cities that were built in the 19th century and the 20th century. There's just not enough space on the road. So if you plan around buses and LRTs and streetcars, you actually have a city that runs more efficiently. But there's a lot of work to do. Everybody who lives in Toronto or Montreal is frustrated by what's going on. They see improvements, but we've all got our horror stories. And as much as I love transit, it drives me crazy sometimes because I know it can work better. Everybody who's traveled the world and seen how it works in Europe and Asia comes back with stories like, oh, that's how you do it. And that's what Straphanger is all about. I went around to all these cities, Tokyo, Copenhagen, Bogota, even in South America, and said, this is what's going on out there. We should be doing better here.
Right, and Montreal kind of considers itself like the North American Copenhagen. I mean, it's very bike friendly. I mean, well, whether we do or not, but it's more bike friendly than most other cities in North America. And you know, now we've got this network of bike lanes, and they want to build more. But is transit suffering? Because I know in 2010, the STM, the Société de Transport de Montréal, was, you know, the number one transit agency, or voted the number one transit agency. Is that slipping, or do you see them moving in the right direction?
Well, we're sitting on Park Avenue right now, and I just saw the Park Avenue bus go by. It's an articulated bus. It's a huge improvement over what was there in the 90s, which was just these clunky little GM buses that were always crowded, didn't come often enough. The STM is doing some good things. It's got a frequent bus network of over 30 bus routes where you're guaranteed service in 10 minutes or under. That's a fantastic attribute. And they're... My criticism is we've got a great metro, but it's only got 68 stations, and they've only added 3 stations to that network since 1986. So we could be doing a lot better. Everything's suffering. Since the metro is extended to Laval, it's overcrowded at rush hours. The AMT, the commuter train service, they've added 3 new lines in the last 10 or 15 years, but they're overcrowded too. And we're devoting a huge amount of money to rebuilding things like the Turket interchange. When we, you know, I think it's only 20 cents of every dollar goes to transit spending in Quebec. I think we need money coming in from both the provincial level and the federal level, which is the really thing that's lacking in Canada. In Europe, they get billions of dollars, each nations like Germany. From their own federal governments, and more money from the European Union. The Conservatives in Ottawa have no national transit strategy, and that's horrible. When they do invest in urban transit, things like the SkyTrain in Vancouver in 2010, it's on an ad hoc basis, so they can show up and cut a ribbon and look good. No, cities just can't count on federal funding, and that would go a long way to helping things.
Well, I wanted to thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, no, a real pleasure being here. And there goes the park bus again.
I love those accordion buses.
Yeah, they're not so bad, actually. I mean, the thing is, now you get a seat, you know, which is one thing about transit. If it's not comfortable, people aren't going to ride it.
Well, thanks again.
Pleasure.